fugitive. She has peaches and cream skin and wears her wavy blonde hair in a messy bun. Her large diamond earrings gleam in the setting sun. She looks delicate in every way, except for the sheathed sword slung around her waist. My gaze trails over the deck, which is fully stocked with an arsenal of spears and harpoons. An old-fashioned fishing ship, maybe? Here, the smell of the sea mingles with the woodsy scent of the ship and a hint of tar. Crew members dressed in blue jackets are climbing up the rigging to unfurl the sails. There's another woman on the deck, too, this one unarmed. She wears a flowing yellow gown and a dreamy expression. As I step closer, I can hear Raphael arguing with Aliena and Faye.
I don't understand,
he tells Aliena in a clipped voice.
Where's our contact?
I told you, he never showed up,
Aliena answers impatiently. A muscle clenches in Raphael's jaw.
What happened to him?
I have no idea. We had to get here by ourselves.
How did you even make it this far?
We had help, Aliena said, gesturing at me. From a tourist.
From high above, Raphael shoots me a cautious look. His otherworldly eyes narrow as he takes me in, but I don't see any flicker of recognition.
You told this woman about us?
He injects the words, this woman, with an impressive amount of disdain, suggesting he might remember me after all. He isn't calling me trash out loud, but it's certainly implied.
We didn't have much choice.
Aliena casts a worried look back toward the policeman at the entrance to the port.
I can explain it all later. We need to get underway.
The blonde woman saunters forward and touches his bicep.
We're not going with this group. The names don't match our list.
None of them, Vivian,
he asks. I stare at them. Are they out of their minds?
Some of them, Vivian clarifies. There are three missing who are supposed to be here, and three more who are not supposed to be here.
She points at the little boy, him and those two ginger ladies. A woman with the same shade of fiery hair wraps her arms around them.
They're my daughters. I'm not leaving them in either of the Fae-controlled territories. Of course I'm not.
We told you, Vivian snaps. Only people who are approved. We were very clear. You're here because of the information you possess. They're of no use to us. Aliena holds the boy's head as he cries against her leg. His tears left streaks on her pale gold dress.
His parents were killed on the way here. He's only four. Do you have children? What kind of person leaves a four-year-old behind?
His parents were warned. We can't take everyone, Vivian shot back. In the setting sun, her diamond earrings glitter. We vet everyone who comes, and we have finite resources.
Do you know what will happen if word gets out that we're taking care of every demi-fae who straggles up to the docks?
I'll tell you what'll happen. We'll lose the war. And here I thought the war was over.
Aliena still strokes the little boy's head. His parents were two of the people killed on the way here. Their names are on the list. We can't leave him. They'll arrest him
or kill him.
So stay and look after him,
Raphael says quietly.
Your choice. There are thousands of demi-fae and human fugitives. We cannot take everyone.
The little boy's face crumples and he turns to Aliena, crying into her thigh.
I'm sorry, Melo, she says. Her voice cracks. I feel a twist in my chest as Aliena climbs the gangplank to the deck. I reach out for Melo's little hand. Now that he's with a stranger, he's trying to stifle the sound of his crying. He must be terrified.
I understand they can't take everyone, but a little boy who just watched his parents die? Clearly Raphael is as much of a prick as always. Raphael catches my eye and runs a hand through his hair.
Look, we have limited funding in space. Every person on our list was handpicked by the Resistance. If we start making exceptions because of sentiment, anarchy will drag us into ruin. We have no room for stragglers, no provisions to help them. We are fighting for our lives.
So is this little boy, I say.
We don't have time to argue with you, adds Vivian. We leave these three behind.
The demi-fae will be slaughtered in the streets. Just like Vina, they'll bleed to death on the cobbles. Would they spare a little boy? I doubt it. Then again, I'm not sure Vivian really cares.
I'm not leaving without my daughters.
At least the red-headed woman is seeing sense here. She folds her arms, glaring up at the ship. With the five of us on the old dock, Raphael nods at Vivian.
Fine, we need to go.
You've got to take them. Please. Please. Desperation rings in my voice. Melo is clinging to my hand. Raphael shakes his head.
The Resistance is doing its best to help the fugitives, but we have to prioritize. We stick to our plans. These people on our list need to be extracted before anyone else. And with respect, you have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
I understand you're abandoning a child who just watched his parents die, I snap.
Raphael grits his teeth.
Not that I need to explain myself to a tiny American pixie princess on a fun holiday jaunt.
Did you just say pixie princess?
But these are the people who can help us fight Oberon. They have information and knowledge we need to win, and that is why we are taking them. We're an army, not a charity. Now why don't you go back to drinking champagne on the beach and chasing after rich men?
My cheeks flush. Oh, wonderful. Apparently he remembers my mother. Chasing after rich men is her favorite hobby, and the entire reason we had those summers at the chateau. Behind me, the two young women are sniffling. At least they have their mom, unlike Melo. Now he only has me. I squeeze his tiny hand. He's crying against my leg now, too. I'm desperate. I need some kind of leverage to stop the ship from setting sail. Unfortunately, confrontation is not one of my skills. I'm generally a people pleaser. And yet, Raphael really brings out the fire in me. One of the crew is already starting to release dock lines. Panic tightens my chest. I clear my throat and venture. Well, I do hope the French police over there don't find out about this. They tend to cooperate with the Fey army to preserve peace. What will they do if someone alerts them?
Stop.
Raphael holds up a hand, stopping the crew from untethering the ship. His body tightens with anger. I can almost feel the cold fury rippling off him.
Is that a threat?
Of course I would never risk these people's lives by calling the authorities, but at least I got his attention. I hold his gaze. I'm just wondering out loud, would they even let your ship leave the port? They're truly terrified Oberon will take the rest of France. Vivienne leaps onto the dock, and the damp wood creaks beneath her feet. In the next heartbeat, she has her blade at my throat. The sea breeze whips at her blonde ringlets. I'm taking her out. I freeze, unable to breathe. I've never been threatened with a weapon before. My head spins and my knees grow weak, but I force myself to meet her gaze.
No,
Elena calls out.
Don't, Vivienne,
Raphael barks.
Too messy.
He leaps down too and steps closer. In the dying light, his pale eyes pierce me. I should be stepping back, turning away, but for some reason, I'm standing my ground. My gaze flicks to Raphael. They're just three extra people. The boy hardly takes any space. With his hands on his hips, he stares back at the dock.
Fine. Vivienne, lower the sword. Everyone comes aboard. I don't have time for this.
I exhale in relief. After a few seconds, Vivienne drops her blade. The red-headed mother looks at me with tears in her eyes.
Thanks, she whispers, for everything.
I swallow hard. Sure, I'm glad I could help. One of the young ginger women scoops Melo into her arms and carries him up the gangplank. Raphael's head is turned and he's staring intently at something. I turn to see what he's looking at, and my heart skips a beat. One of the policemen is running for us, his feet thundering over the wooden dock.
Nia Melisande,
he shouts from the distance.
How does he know your name?
Asks Raphael icily. He checked my passport. Raphael pulls on a cap, covering the curved tips of his ears. Then smoothly, he leaps onto the dock. To my surprise, he slides his arm around my shoulders and turns me to face the other direction. He points out to the sea like he's showing me a sunset.
Follow my lead and play along. Stay relaxed, calm.
My breath slows, my thoughts zeroing in on the warmth of his arm around my shoulders. Bizarrely, I find myself actually staying calm, as if his words are a command I can't ignore. His masculine scent triggers a long-buried memory. But the last time I saw him, he wasn't nearly this muscular.
Nia Melisande,
the cop calls again from behind us. With his arm still wrapped around me, Raphael turns, a calm smile on his face. He raises his eyebrows.
Looking for my wife? She's not feeling very well, I'm afraid.
We make a ridiculous pair. I'm short as hell, and Raphael towers over me. The policeman is still catching his breath, one hand on his chest.
My colleague said,
he gasps and breathes in deeply.
There were others who walked in with you, unaccounted for.
He waves at the boat.
Those lot, we never checked their papers.
Raphael frowns.
Oh no, it's fine. They had their passports checked earlier.
He pulls his arm from me, coughing into his elbow.
Bloody hell, Nia. I told you that you were going to give me that fever. Have your blisters gone?
I stare at him for a moment, but only just a moment. I can always figure out what people want and give it to them. It's one of my greatest skills. And right now, I know exactly what role I'm supposed to play. I wince, touching my side. No, I must have caught something terrible. Raphael grimaces.
I tell you what, it's the mongrel flu is what it is. Do you know how bloody contagious that is, Nia?
Well, it's not like I did it on purpose. If you weren't manhandling me all the time, you might have avoided catching the cankers.
Cankers?
Asks the policeman. His mustache twitches. I shoot him a forlorn look. In all the places the sun don't shine, they're in my throat too, and if I cough... I start to cough. He pales and glances at the boat.
Perhaps I needn't worry about their passports then.
I nod, still coughing. I hope it's not fatal. They all have it too. The cop casts another worried look at the boat. He starts to turn and walk away, and my chest unclenches. But before he takes another step, he freezes. As he turns back to the boat, his brow furrows. The wind skims over us. Slowly, a look of fury crosses his features. I turn to see who he's looking at. Melo, his little pointed ears showing through his dark curls. The cop opens his mouth to shout, but Raphael jabs him in the throat. It all happens so quickly I can hardly register what he's done. The cop falls to the ground, choking and gurgling. My heart gallops in my chest, my eyes wide with horror. Raphael reaches down, grabs the cop's head and jaw, and swiftly twists. There's a sickening crunch and the policeman's body sags. I stare, shocked. Just like before. 1 minute someone was standing there alive, and the next moment, gone. I had no idea someone could kill a person that silently and efficiently with only his bare hands.
Quick,
Raphael says.
Grab that net there.
Out of reflex, I follow his instruction, grasping a tangled, weighted fishing net and numbly handing him the edge.
Help me.
His voice is crisp, impossible to argue with. He wraps the net around the body. I try to help him, my fingers trembling. What am I doing? When the cop is wrapped up, Raphael kicks him into the sea. With the weights tied to the net, the body instantly sinks. My heart is still racing when Raphael grabs me by the bicep and drags me up the gangplank. I stumble onto the deck. What's happening? I ask, stunned by the sudden turn of events.
He knew your name,
Raphael says tersely.
Which means the other cops might know your name. You can't stay here to get interrogated.
I have a million more questions, but no time to ask them. I lick my lips, tasting salt. What am I going to do in this situation? Fight off the lethal armed spies with my purse? Already, Vivienne is sidling up to him. How long until they find his body?
There's a strong westerly undercurrent here. He'll be dragged a mile away, but we need to go now.
His glance darts back to the beach.
The nearest police station is just 230 yards away. They might come looking for him. I reckon we have about 7 minutes to get out of here.
I'm not going with you, I say with as much confidence as I can muster. None of this is part of my plan. I have a ticket back home in a week. All my things are back in my hotel. I'm not someone who deals with stress well, and I'm barely functioning. At this point, I have no desire to throw myself into more danger. Vivienne raises her sword, and the blade nicks my throat. The thing is, we're not asking. My stomach drops. I stare at her, my thoughts racing. Wisps of her blonde hair lift in the wind, and she watches me with pale eyes. Usually I'm good at figuring out what people want, and using that to get what I want to. But right now, my mind is drawing a blank, because this woman is not about to back down.
Cast off, Raphael calls out. Everyone's on board.
The world seems to dim as people bustle around. The boat's engine roars to life, spewing black smoke. My stomach twists in knots. Where the hell are they taking me? As we set off, the marine wind whips at my hair. Finally, Vivienne lowers her sword. Her jaw is clenched, and she's looking at me with disgust. I look back at the dock. It grows smaller and smaller. This is a horrible mistake, something I never should have jumped into. And yet, what else could I have done? Chapter 5. The ship rocks with every wave, the horizon tilting left and right, up and down. Seawater mists my face, and the ship's timbers groan and creak. I stand by the stern, clutching the railing, my stomach roiling with the movement. I'm not very good with boats. I can get seasick just looking at the water.
And right now, I'm regretting the berry cake I ate earlier. In fact, I regret getting out of bed this morning. The bed didn't go up and down. The bed was great. So steady and reliable. Hey, someone calls from behind me. You. Nauseated, I turn around to see Vivienne glaring at me. The Mediterranean wind whips loose strands of her curls. Raphael wants to see you. Okay, I say faintly. He's waiting for you in the captain's quarters. She points emphatically. Right. Maybe inside, where I don't see the waves, I'll feel better. I keep a tight grip on the rail as I cross the gently sloping deck. How long is this journey going to last? I climb up a narrow set of stairs to the quarterdeck. An ornately carved door leads to the captain's quarters. The moment I step inside, I instantly feel worse, the movement of the ship even more pronounced below decks. Raphael, however, is completely unbothered by it. He's standing over an enormous table, staring at a map. In here, everything is burnished mahogany or brass, and the scent of the wood feels oppressive. Only now do I realize that Vivienne is behind me, practically breathing down my neck. I lean on the other side of the table, trying not to vomit. Even though Raphael supposedly wanted to see me, he ignores me and looks at Vivienne.
Everything in order.
Looks that way. Elena is taking care of the rest of the group.
Good. Did you check on the TTCB?
I did. No alerts.
Check again. I don't want any surprises.
Raphael was clearly in command here. On it. She steps outside.
Close the door.
He doesn't even look up from the map when he gives me the order. His skin is so tan, I wonder how much time he spends out here on the sea. I close the door behind me, trying to breathe deeply. Nausea churns in my stomach, and I wonder what he'll do if I bring up that cake all over his map. What's, TTCB? I ask. A corked eyebrow.
None of your concern.
Right, okay. I suppose I don't need to know what it is. I don't really need to be anywhere near this ship, or near Raphael and his attitude. I shove my nausea and my hatred down, and flash an attempt at a charming smile. Though given how I feel, I suspect it looks cadaverous. My name is Nia. Lovely to meet you. Such an impressive ship you're commanding. He cocks his head, frowning. He lets the silence hang in the air just to let me know how much he hates me. I've got news for you, my friend. The feeling is mutual. I quickly abandon the plan to charm him. Something about him makes my skin prickle with heat, and I can feel my nostrils flaring. I take a seat across from him at the table and clutch my stomach. Well, I wasn't expecting to run into the Prince of Bordeaux here. My voice twists with the intense dislike I feel. I'm shocked at the words that tumble out of my mouth. Really, I'm usually nice.
Yes, I remember you too. American.
I'm not sure if the last word is a description or a derisive nickname. Ice spreads through the air between us, and he leans closer to me across the table. So close that I can see that his silver eyes blend to a bright blue just at the edges, eyes fringed with long black lashes. I wonder if Vivienne is his girlfriend. They'd go well together. Gorgeous exteriors, insufferable personalities.
I remember you.
His expression is unreadable.
And your mother.
My stomach tightens, and I feel a sudden urge to jump off the boat. The memory of him carrying my drunk mother up the stairs rears its ugly head, and my urge to throw up is back again in full force. I'm surprised you remember.
Hard to forget.
Okay, so we don't like each other. I glare at him. And just so you know, I usually like almost everyone, and I don't like upsetting people, so it's...
A high degree of loathing for me. Got it.
He drums his fingertips on the table.
I don't understand how someone like you could pull off getting these fugitives to the city, or why you would even bother.
Someone like you? Cold fury snaps through me, making me grit my teeth. I was going to say the same for you, because you seem prone to making snap judgments about people you know very little about. And that can't be a great quality in a leader, can it? Not to mention it would make you a shitty spy. Something feels good about letting it all out. Is this why people argue? Is this why people get drunk and scream in the town squares? I get it now. He takes a seat in a high-back leather chair and folds his arms.
Why don't you report in detail how you helped the fugitives reach us?
He still sounds like he doesn't believe me. After all, what could garbage like me possibly know? I sigh, growing flustered. I was having birthday cake at a restaurant. I ordered lavender, but they brought blackberry.
I mean report the relevant details.
Fine. He lifts a finger.
Hang on. You're celebrating your birthday by yourself.
I glare at him. That's right, I'm a giant loser on top of everything else. I'm on vacation by myself. Yes. Not that it's any of your business.
From what I remember, you spend a lot of time on holidays.
He murmurs. Do you want me to report or not? I say sharply. I suppose I don't need to tell him that my days of having luxury vacations are over, that I spent 5 years eating store-brand cereal to save up the fare, and, tempting as it is, I will not tell him that he ruined 5 years of careful planning by kidnapping me. If you must know, Raphael, I saw the demi-fae through a restaurant window. By the time I realized who they were, someone was watching us, and I was guilty by association. There were fae soldiers marching around. The fugitives looked terrified, and I hate when people are scared. My mind flickers with a memory of Mother screaming that bugs were crawling on her skin. I clear my throat. So I pretended to be a tour guide, and that they were my group, and I led them to the docks.
And that was it? You just jumped in and brought them to me?
It wasn't that easy, I snap. A member of the group panicked and ran. Vina was separated from us, and the fae soldiers slit her throat. That's why I didn't want you to leave the others behind. They're executing people in the streets. His expression doesn't change at this news.
There were 14 when they left the Broceliande. 11 got to us, plus the extra we didn't want. That's a 78% success rate. Above average.
My throat tightens. It seems so cold to refer to Vina as a percentage. I didn't know her at all, but somewhere her family would be mourning her death. His pale eyes are locked on my face.
I know what you're thinking, but it's a war. People die. We need to focus on the living, and right now I need to know exactly what happened. Every little detail might be important. So start at the beginning. Where did you see them? Why did you even approach them?
I go over it, racking my brain for every single detail. The jewel, the woman who stuck her head out from her house, the two red dragons swooping overhead, the way we hid in the veil.
Stop right there.
He raises his hand.
What do you mean, you hid in the veil? The veil is lethal to anyone without an orb, and there's only a handful of those in the world.
I shrug. This part of the veil wasn't lethal. He stares at me, his face an expressionless mask.
I understand how the magic works, and you obviously don't. There are no parts of the veil that are safe. None.
I spread my palms. Well, I'm still here, so I guess there are. Darkness slides through his eyes.
All of it is lethal.
I've contradicted him, and he doesn't like it. You asked me to tell you what happened, and I'm telling you. The veil shifted over me like it was hungry. It enveloped me. But there was no humming once I was inside it. There wasn't any prickling on my skin like there usually is when I get close. His expression tightens.
No humming. You hear humming near the veil?
Yes, because it hums. Anyway, the others joined me inside the veil, and they were also safe, and it was quiet. No humming. His expression is so cold, I practically get goosebumps.
And if I go ask the others, they'll verify that's what happened.
I'm not imagining things, I say with a touch too much force. Because the truth is, I do imagine things, and I'm sometimes confused about what's real and what's not.
Right. Give me a minute.
He stands, and I suddenly remember how ridiculously tall he is. He has to duck his head to leave the cabin. I wait, replaying everything he said to me. His skill for condescension is really unparalleled. Someone like you.
I remember you, and your mother.
The disdain in his tone. I stand, clutching my stomach, and make my way to the door as quickly as possible. I'm afraid the cake is about to make an appearance for a second celebration. I swing the door open. The fugitives are sitting on the deck, and the clouds have darkened to a purplish gray. I rush for the boat's rail, pushing my way through the group. A high-pitched voice, loud and terrified, echoes in my mind. We're gonna die! We're gonna die! There's no escape! They'll catch you! We're gonna die! Oh, hell no. It's happening again. This is the entire reason my doctor told me to avoid stress. I'm not avoiding stress, and now the voices are back. I whirl around, checking to see if it could be real screaming, but no one's lips are moving. The voice shrieks in my skull, laced with hysteria. I can tell myself it's not real, but the fear is infecting me anyway. My heart lurches. We're going to die! No, we're not, I mutter,
clamping my hands over my ears and shutting my eyes. We're not. Please be quiet. I'm not. The nausea and screaming are overwhelming me. Stop screaming in my skull! The voice stops. Totally quiet now. When I open my eyes again, everyone is gawking at me. Raphael stands nearby, his eyebrows drawn together. I'm sure his opinion of me didn't improve much in the past 20 seconds. Vivienne glares at me. Is she on drugs? If only it were that simple. I want to get away from their stares. I make my way back to the captain's quarters. Yanking the door open, I clutch my stomach. Of course this was bound to happen. It's been a few weeks since I heard the voices, and I was getting really hopeful that maybe this time they were really gone. I've never had a diagnosis or anything, because the voices are the only symptom I have. Apart from them, I have no disordered thinking. My doctor believes 10% of the population hears voices, and that it's something to do with the subconscious and human evolution, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that while others might hear gentle guidance, my voices are very loud. The only thing that guarantees silence in my mind is being under no stress at all, just lounging in my room reading, which makes the bookstore a perfect place for me to work. I drop into a chair in the cabin, dreading Raphael's return. I was hoping the next thing he would say to me would be something like, "Apologies, you were absolutely right about the veil, and you are clearly completely rational." But I'm not sure that's in the cards now. The door creaks open, and I turn, expecting Raphael. Instead, it's the woman with the yellow dress who saunters in. The warm cabin light washes over her coppery skin, and she's holding a delicate porcelain teacup with a saucer. Her dark brown ringlets are a halo around her pretty face. She flashes me a disarming smile, and the scent of bergamot reaches my nose. My stomach revolts again. She peers at me over her teacup. A strange, intricate tattoo of a vine decorates her neck, disappearing into her collar. She sips her tea. Good evening. I'm still trying to calm my beating heart, but when I focus on her, a little of the nausea goes away. Her eyes are large, with mismatched colors, one hazel, one brown. I'm Tanya, she says airily. I'm Nia.
Oh, you poor thing. That's it. Let it all out.
Another wave of nausea crashes over me.
Let all what out? Oh, sorry. She smiles. I got confused. That hasn't happened yet.
I desperately need a nap on still land.
Do you work for Raphael?
I guess I do. The thought seems to surprise her. She sits across from me, sipping her tea and staring at me over her teacup.
What do you do here? I finally ask her.
She frowns, and the steam curls in front of her face.
I need to look out for pursuit. Are any other dangers out here? My job is to keep us safe.
Is that something to do with the TTCB? She laughs brightly.
Spy boys and their acronyms. I guess I am the TTCB. It stands for T-Tarot Crystal Ball.
She leans forward and whispers,
I don't really use the crystal ball. So tacky.
My eyebrows raise. Is that really... I want to ask, is that actually reliable because it sounds like nonsense? But I can hear how condescending that sounds.
I can sometimes see things.
She takes one last sip and flips the cup onto the saucer. Then she removes the cup and shoves the saucer across the table toward me. The tea leaves lie on the saucer in dark, damp clusters.
See? The leaves say there's one patrol ship. It's far to the north.
She pauses.
Actually, it could also be foretelling a rainy day tomorrow. No, definitely a patrol ship, like I said before.
You read the future in tea leaves to look for patrol ships?
It's not a perfect system, she sighs, but I've got us out of a few near scrapes.
A sudden wave rocks the boat, and the nausea crashes over me. I slam through the door, bursting onto the deck, and make it to the rail just in time. Gripping the wood, I unleash my birthday cake into the angry sea. I hang over the rail, wiping my mouth on the back of my hand. I rest my head for a moment, and then feel a hand on my back.
Oh, you poor thing, that's it. Let it all out, Tanya says.
Oh, gods, I moan, straightening. I feel slightly better.
Here, she hands me tea in a porcelain cup. It'll make you feel better.
I take a sip, closing my eyes. To my surprise, it starts working almost immediately. I take another sip and already feel my stomach calm. I clutch the teacup and look at her. The wind wisps her curls.
You predicted that. Though I suppose it wasn't exactly hard to predict. She nods.
Back in Procillion, I used to tell people whether they'd find love in their life.
Her eyes sadden.
Then suddenly all I could see in the future was death. Tens of thousands slain, the demi-fae hounded. I had to get out, so I did. The cards led me here to train for MI-13. Luckily I have a skill they need.
I down the rest of the tea and hand the cup back to her.
Thank you, I think I really am better.
Only now do I realize we're sailing west, and I can see the last arc of the molten sun dip beneath the horizon. Already the moon is out, a curve of silver in the indigo. She takes the cup from my hand and flips it onto a saucer, just as she did before. As the boat rocks, she examines the patterns of the tea leaves, and her eyes widen.
Oh, Nia,
she says breathlessly.
You don't even know.
I swallow. Know what?
How extraordinary,
she whispers. My eyes widen. What do you see?
We'll have to do a card reading later,
she says, her voice sharp with excitement.
This is a lot for tea.
She glances over my shoulder with a smile. I turn to see Raphael approaching. I marvel at the way he's able to move so gracefully, like a cat, even on a rocking ship. He looks perfectly in control of himself at all times. A born leader. I have to remind myself of what he did all those years ago.
There he is, Tanya says. The captain of our lost vessel.
We're not lost, Raphael says.
We're lost in time, she murmurs.
He sighs. Tanya, did you see anything?
One patrol ship far to the north.
He shrugs slowly, sliding his hands into his pockets.
We'll avoid it. Can you give me a moment alone with Nia?
With a smile, she glides away. Raphael leans back against the rail, looking far too casual, given we're out at sea, evading the Fae army. His gaze cuts to me. It's dark now, but his eerie pale eyes burn in the gloom.
I talked to Aeliena. She says exactly what you said about the veil.
I flash him a half smile. Told you. No, I'm not above saying I told you so.
But the veil doesn't hum, Nia. It doesn't make anyone's skin prickle.
I blink at him. It does. Like bees. You haven't heard it?
Only you can hear it humming like that. Because it resonates with your magic.
I frown at him. No, you're confused. I say slowly, as if talking to a little child. I don't have magic. I'm fully human. My dad is a boring finance guy named Walter. And my mom? Well, you've met my mom.
But you do have magic. A rare form of magic. You're a sentinel.
I turn, gripping the rail again, and stare out at sea. No, listen, I haven't seen Walter in a while, but... Walter was definitely human. No one so boring could ever be Fae. Anyway, I'm fully human. I've never in my life used magic. One of his dark eyebrows shoots up.
A sentinel can disable the veil. That's what you did. You disabled the veil's magic with your magic. Sentinels are the only ones who hear the hum of the veil.
I shake my head. It must be one of the fugitives.
It's not one of them. Sentinels are extremely rare, and it's not them. Only a sentinel can feel the magic on the veil prickle their skin, exactly like you described. None of the fugitives heard the veil hum. Only you did. And now, your vacation days are over. Because MI-13 currently has only two sentinels, and we need another.
My eyes widen as his words sink in. When I think about it, Walter and Mom cheated on each other all the time. I suppose my dad could be anyone. Oh, hell no. I won't be getting out of this easily, will I? Chapter 6. My jaw drops.
You can't be serious.
Me? The briny wind whips at the dark waves.
For reasons that are beyond me, you've been born with a gift, he says. You have a responsibility to use it.
You've got the wrong person. The truth is, I'm barely functioning. He nods at the others.
Not that long ago, you were the one insisting that we leave no one behind.
Are you all done caring about others now?
A note of mockery rings in his deep voice.
Let me guess, it was a good story before, but now it's interrupting your luxurious vacation a little too much, right?
I'm not trained. I'm not qualified,
I'm asthmatic. I can't handle stress. I hallucinate. I hear voices. I am fundamentally broken.
He stares out to sea. Well, I can't say I'm surprised the little pixie princess would rather not get her hands dirty.
Prick. Blood rushes to my face. It's not that I don't care. I just don't want to be a liability.
Why are you even trying to talk her into it? Vivienne sidles up to him, standing so close their arms touch. The girl was covering her ears and screaming at shadows just a few minutes ago. We can't have someone like that on a mission. She's cracked.
I clench the railing and stare out to sea. I hate the fact that she's right.
The American doesn't need to be a fully trained agent of Camelot,
says Raphael. All she needs is to get a crew through the veil using her magic.
Did he say Camelot? You really think I'm half fae? My brain is still scrambling to keep up. Vivienne ignores me. You'd enter the veil knowing that your life depends on her abilities. They're really talking about me, as if I'm not right here. I'm about to speak up when Tanya rushes over.
Raphael, her voice has a sharp edge. The card's a warning of danger.
From where?
Raphael asks, turning to look at the horizon.
The patrol ship in the north, or are they coming from France?
Tanya shakes her head.
From below.
For a second, the words just hang there, no one's saying anything. Then Raphael shouts,
Battle stations!
What's going on? I ask.
Get inside the cabin, he commands.
Screams ring out as the boat dips sharply to the left. I slip, slamming into the rail. As the boat pitches, I frantically grip the wet rail. The sea is directly beneath me now, and I find myself staring at the churning waves. The water is darker, much darker than it should be. Suddenly, it erupts, knocking the boat back in the other direction. I'm clinging to the rail for dear life, but I lose my grip and slide back across the deck. Seawater washes over me, and I'm sure that I'm about to topple over into the waves. A powerful arm wraps around my waist, holding me tightly. Raphael secures me against his enormous body, one hand on the rail, the other curled around my drenched white dress. I can feel the steel of his muscles through his clothes as I hold on.
Hang on,
he shouts over the roar of waves, then releases me. I grab the rail and he charges up to the main deck. My stomach flips as I follow Raphael with my eyes. An enormous, serpentine coil rises above our boat. Thick as a ship, it's covered in metallic scales that gleam silver in the moonlight. Rising high above us, it blocks out the sky. I can't figure out where it starts and where it ends. Or maybe it's everywhere. A sea serpent. I've only seen one in a blurry photo before. From the Battle of Mont-Saint-Michel, when the Fae and their serpents destroyed most of the French Navy. But terrifying as that photo was, it didn't do this creature justice. My heart plummets as it opens its jaws, exposing rows of jagged teeth. It screams like a banshee, then snaps down toward the deck so quickly that I feel the rush of its speed whooshing past, and the smell of rot fills the air. When it rears up again, I see someone's legs sticking out of its mouth, frantically kicking. People hurl spears, but they bounce off the monster's scales.
Aim for the throat,
shouts Raphael. The scales there are thinner, its flesh exposed, but the angle and the creature's horrifying speed make it almost impossible to hit. Screaming erupts around me. The boat tips to the right and I'm tossed against the ship's wheel. Pain explodes at the side of my head. I scramble to my feet and turn to follow some of the fugitives who are trying to get to the relative safety of the cabin. And then I notice something from the corner of my eye. Melo, huddled by the railing, up on the main deck. The boat keeps rocking, but I grab the rail and force myself toward the wooden stairs. The beast shrieks, and the sound rumbles through my marrow. I make a run for the stairs. As I struggle to climb them, sea spray washes over me, robbing me of breath. It's chaos. Wires snap free and wood splinters around us. Blood streaks across the deck, mingling with the seawater. Raphael is barking orders. A few uniformed crew members are thrusting spears at the beast, trying to hit its throat. Eliana and some of the others are clinging to whatever they can. Melo's grasping the railing, petrified, screaming into the wind. The serpent looms above him, ignoring the spears bouncing off its scales as its malevolent red gaze finds the boy.
Melo!
I shout. But there's no way he can hear me in the chaos. The serpent rears back, unlocking its jaws. Those sharp teeth will be carving through the little boy any second now. I need to distract the beast. But there's no way it'll notice me. even if I lunge at it and strike it with my fists. A desperate idea sparks to life in my mind, and I rush over to Eliana. I grip one of the thick wires for steadiness, and with a sharp tug, rip the crystal pendant off her neck, the shimmering jewel she told me makes noise and light when shattered. I slide across the deck and smash it on the boat's iron rail. A sharp, keening cry rips across the horizon, so loud that it drowns out the other noise. Blinding, colorful lights burst from the pendant. The sound slides through my bones, overwhelming me. As the lights fade, the world dims to a haze, and there is a ringing in my ears. I hang on tightly, and a wave crashes overboard, drenching me again. When I look up, I see that it worked. I distracted the serpent from Melo. Unfortunately, it's now staring in my direction, its eyes searing through me. It hisses, and it sounds like it's speaking Fae. As it lunges for me, Raphael knocks me to the deck. We roll out of the way as the serpent strikes, the snapping jaws inches from us. Raphael scrambles to grab a discarded spear, and just as the beast starts to raise its head, he thrusts the spear into its thinly protected throat. Shrieking, it rears back, the spear jutting from its neck. The monster looms like a tidal wave, and I wonder if it's going to crash down on the boat. Then, it disappears beneath the water, leaving a dark stain of blood shimmering under the starlight. I stare at the rippling waves. "Did you kill it?" Raphael grips the rail. Seawater slides down his golden skin and drips from his dark hair.
"Not quite."
His tone is perfectly even, like he's talking about flowers blooming in his garden. As soon as the words are out of his mouth, a furious shriek rends the air. The serpent shoots from the water, mouth gaping. From behind, a hollow thunk sounds, and a harpoon soars through the air. It sinks into the creature's eye, turning it into a red crater. The serpent keens in torment, then slides into the waves. I whirl to see Vivienne bracing an enormous harpoon gun against her shoulder. Raphael pulls out another harpoon and hands it to her. She loads it, and it clicks into place. As she scans the water, tension coils around us. All of us wait, half expecting the beast to surface again. But now the waves have calmed. Vivienne lowers the harpoon gun, then returns it to its mount. She wipes her hands on her dress and crosses back to the quarterdeck. I stare after her. Gods damn it. I didn't want to have to admire her, but I do. Eliana scoops up Melo and turns to follow Vivienne. She pauses, leveling her violet gaze on my face.
"That's twice you saved his life. He's been through a lot. Oberon has been hunting us in Brocéliande, then in the new territories in Fey France. I know this."
I tremulously smile at him, and a glow spreads through my chest. Melo reaches out for me and touches my arm, just a soft brush of his fingers. Then he lowers his head against Eliana. I wipe the streams of seawater off my face and look down. My white dress, I discover, is now virtually transparent. On most days, I'd be red-faced with mortification. But given what just happened, I don't think anyone is really paying attention to my nipples. With a tight throat, I look up at the glittering stars spread out above us, relieved that most of us survived. I walk down the stairs and step back into the captain's cabin, my legs shaking. Raphael and Vivienne are standing by the table. Vivienne's blonde hair drapes over one of his broad shoulders. She doesn't seem to notice me, but Raphael's eyes flick my way the moment I walk in. His jaw tightens like he's annoyed by the interruption. But he did just offer me a job, didn't he? For a second, I think of stepping out again. Better than what I'm about to do. I shouldn't make such a decision so rashly. But the emotion that washed through me when Melo touched me in thanks doesn't ebb away. This is real, realer than anything I've ever done. Fine. I drop into a leather chair, dripping seawater all over it. I'll be your sentinel. I can hardly believe I'm saying it. Vivienne sighs and rolls her eyes, but Raphael's silvery gaze studies me. Droplets of seawater cling to his long black eyelashes. For a moment, I think he's going to change his mind and say no. His gaze dips, and his entire body seems to go still, the muscles tensing. I watch as his fist flexes. Is he regretting asking someone like me to join him? After what seems like an endless silence, he looks up at me again.
Good. We'll drop the fugitives at a safe house, and then we'll carry on to Camelot. You'll be at our spy academy.
A spy academy? I frown. How long has this academy been around? He leans back in his chair.
About 2,000 years, since the Romans. And now we're a secret part of the British government. If you look over the list of the British military intelligence services, you see MI1, MI2, and so on. MI5 and 6 are the most well-known.
Right, James Bond.
They go all the way up to MI19. But all public lists skip MI13.
And that's you? In Camelot? As in King Arthur?
That's where we train spies. Avalon Tower in Camelot, he says. And I think we could use you.
You think I could hack it in a spy academy? I absolutely cannot. I was terrified just now. I don't really need any more terror in my life. He leans back and shrugs.
Well, fear is normal. It's an ordinary response.
You didn't look scared. You didn't appear to show any emotion whatsoever when we were nearly killed by a sea monster.
You know who else doesn't have fear?
I wanted to say.
Psychopaths.
He sighs. Right. Well, I didn't say being scared serves any purpose. It's detrimental in most cases. I said it's ordinary. Anyway, despite your fear, I think maybe we can teach you how to be an agent. I think you can learn to be a spy if you can master your emotions.
Ordinary. I brush a strand of damp hair out of my eyes. Does becoming an agent involve spending time around you? Are you the person who would teach me to master my emotions? Because I don't love that idea. Something unreadable flickers in his eyes.
Trust me, I don't want to spend time around you either.
I glare at him. Usually I tell people what they want to hear, but Raphael brings out something completely different in me, and I'm not sure I can stop it. Chapter 7. I lean over the guardrail, staring at the choppy sea. The medicinal tea wears off about every half hour, and I'm retching. It's a really charming cycle of swallowing tea and bringing it up again. After the sea serpent's attack, we all spend the rest of the journey teetering between exhaustion and slightly hysterical fear. Everyone, that is, except Raphael. As far as I can tell, the man never tires or experiences emotion. Hours ago, we dropped the fugitives by the towering white cliffs at the south of England, but the journey just seemed to stretch on, and on, and on. With a broken ship, we've been moving along the southern coast all night at a snail's pace. If my geography is correct, we're sailing around Cornwall. Seagulls squawk and swoop overhead. I wipe a shaky hand across my lips, my gaze on the horizon. The first blush of dawn tinges the sky, and the fiery curve of the sun rises above Cornwall. At last, we're heading toward land, the foggy mouth of a river. Even now, hours later, my dress is still damp, and I'm chilled to the bone. The garment is ripped in several places, and there's a wooden splinter in my forearm. Serpent blood stains the white fabric. Raphael steers us into the river, and rickety wooden piers rise up on either side of us. An empty iron cage hangs from a post on one of the docks. I blink at it. Did we travel back in time? The ominous metal box looks like something they once hung pirates in. Tana hands me another cup of tea.
Almost there, love.
To Camelot? She nods.
It was once part of Cornwall, you know. Until the King of Wessex invaded, the rulers of Camelot used magic to hide it. Some say it was Merlin himself, protecting Camelot from his oak tree. Some say he doesn't die.
Goosebumps rise on my skin. Around us, the river narrows. On either side, stone and timber frame buildings crowd the riverbanks. A thin fog hangs over them, tinged by rosy morning light. Gas lamps lend an ochre glow to the mist. This place really feels like stepping back in time. How come no one knows about Camelot? For some reason, I'm whispering.
A secret, of course. She smiles at me. That's what makes it a perfect place for spies. Only permitted ships can enter.
She sighs.
This river is haunted, you know. I can feel it. A long time ago, the Fae used to cut off people's heads and throw them in the river. And now, I can hear their spirits whispering.
A shiver runs through me.
Oh.
I can almost hear their whispers myself. I didn't know the Fae once lived close to humans. Tana smiles faintly.
Oh, yes, in peace, for a while.
She cocks her ear at the water as if listening to something, then shrugs. They named the tower after the old Fae Kingdom Avalon. Tonna smiles wistfully. In some parts of Camelot, you can still find the roads and temples built by the Pendragon kings long ago. The Pendragon walls encircle the city, hundreds of feet high. A few hundred years ago, we stopped putting severed heads on the city gates, you'll be pleased to know. At least I'm pretty sure we stopped.
I clear my throat.
I'm glad to hear it. That's twice now she's mentioned severed heads. Our academy dates back to the Roman occupation of Britain. You'll learn all about it soon enough.
We drift past stone buildings that stretch up into the morning sky. As the wind skims over me, I take another sip of warm tea and stare as we slowly drift toward a white bridge. My heart flutters. The remaining mast and the engine's tall pipe will never clear it. No sooner does the thought cross my mind than the bridge splits in the middle with a metallic groan, the two halves lifting into the sky to make room for our ship. Once we clear the bridge, we glide further east, where the river widens into a glassy lake. In the distance, a castle towers over the river. My breath catches, and I stare at it. Camelot. The stone has an almost golden tinge, the towers cloaked in wisps of fog. Part of the castle stretches out into the lake, shrouded in mist.
Avalon Tower, Camelot's oldest castle,
Tonna whispers, pointing to the right.
In the days of Arthur, Avalon was out there, occupied by the Fae and ruled by the evil Queen Morgan. She's dead now, defeated by the Pendragons. For 1,500 years, Avalon has been lost in the mists of the lake, and no one can find it.
And Merlin was a Fae?
Oh yes, a Fae ally to the humans, but things fell apart.
I turn to look at Camelot again and my jaw drops. Tonna said the castle was called Avalon Tower, but it's a city surrounded by walls and gates, turrets and spires, connected by high walls that rise over the river. Moss climbs the stone, the growth so dense that it makes the walls seem to blend with the natural world around them. The fog thins, and the rising sun washes the golden stone in a rosy shade. Our ship glides into a narrow canal and bumps into a wooden dock. On the main deck, I can hear Raphael barking commands to the crew. Tudor-style timber-frame houses line one side of the canal, and apple trees grow on the other. My bleary eyes take in the activity all around us, burly men unloading cargo from ships, others pulling ropes to moor us to the wooden dock. A mixture of scents assaults my nose, spices, apples, the sweat of the workers. Finally, the ship is moored, and I close my eyes, thanking the gods that we've arrived at last. I'm in a daze as I follow Tonna down the gangplank. Even here on steady earth, the ground seems to still move beneath me. Dressed in a dark peacoat, Raphael leads us off the ship toward a stone archway. He shoves his hands in his pockets, not even looking at me. Vivienne glides along next to him. But when we're in the archway, she stops abruptly, blocking my path. She stares down at me, cocking her head. May I see your passport? Why? I want to see exactly what the French soldiers read. I retrieve it from my leather bag. It's streaked with water in a few places, but readable. I hand it to her, and she turns and walks away, little pieces of ripped paper fluttering in her wake. The torn pieces of my passport! Panicking, I hurry after her. What are you doing? She whirls and grabs me by the throat, pinning me to the wall. I don't want you here, she says through gritted teeth. You're weak, you're impulsive, and you threaten to inform the French soldiers about us. I think Raphael is making a bad decision because of a pretty face. Do you know how much that infuriates me? I don't answer. Hard to talk when you can't breathe. Lucky for me, she goes on. You're unlikely to survive even the first weeks of training. It's brutal and dangerous, and the Pendragons will cut you down in a heartbeat. You'll be dead before you can betray us. She releases me. I gasp for breath, my hands going to my bruised throat. Little does she know, Raphael thinks I'm an idiot. But something tells me I'm better off if she believes someone powerful is on my side. If you don't want me here, then why the hell did you rip up my passport? I croak. She quirks an eyebrow. Do you really think I'd let you leave, now that you can expose our location? She's still boxing me in. You're not leaving. And if I get even the faintest hint that you're going to pull another stunt like threatening to inform on us, I will end your life. Maybe your dinner will be poisoned. Maybe I'll slit your throat in your sleep. Maybe I'll simply bash your pretty little head against a rock. Understood. She hurries away into the narrow streets, and as much as I have no desire to follow her, I have no choice. Most of my money is in the spa hotel in France. I no longer have my passport. Without the help of someone powerful, I'm stuck in Camelot. I touch my neck, wincing as I catch up to the others. Raphael apparently didn't see a thing. He looks relaxed as he leads us through a narrow network of cobbled streets. Timber and brick buildings nestle on either side of the lanes, and smoke coils from chimneys above us. Bloodstained and tattered, with dirt smeared on the back of my dress, I look like one of the fugitives I just rescued. Except here, in Camelot, no one notices. Who are all these people? It's not long before the alley opens up to a large thoroughfare, where horse-drawn carriages race over the stones. Is this really where I live now? Camelot? I have no idea how long I'll be here, or how I'd get out if I had to. Mom will miss me bitterly. Or at least, she'll miss that I bring home money and pay the rent. What on earth is she going to do without me? I guess maybe it's time she figures that out. And in any case, it doesn't seem like I have much of an option to get out of this. No more bookstore. No more one-bedroom apartment shared with Mom as she binges coke and alcohol. A distinct silver lining. We walk down a gently sloping hill toward the castle that looms over the Lake of Avalon. From here, I can see that Avalon Tower is a vast construction, with two sets of walls surrounding a number of central buildings. Raphael leads us to a gatehouse set into one of the walls. He still hasn't uttered a word to me. I suppose we did declare our hatred for one another. A line of guards stands outside the gatehouse, their smart red cloaks vibrant against the stone and oak. As Raphael marches up to the gate, the soldiers part without a word, like leaves drifting on a lake. Above the arched door, the words Avalon Tor are carved in the weathered stone. Old English, I think. That carving must be over 1,000 years old. The heavy oak door groans open, and I step across the threshold. A strange thrill flutters over my skin. This place feels important, ancient, powerful. Across the courtyard, a central castle stands on a gently rising hill. It's made of ivory stone, and its spires loom over us 4 stories high. The sight makes me dizzy, and unbidden, a nursery rhyme floats through my thoughts. Avalon Tower, the midnight hour, bury his head in the raven's bower. Strange rhyme. Definitely not something Mom would sing to me. Maybe a nanny? Tana yawns and points at the ivory castle.
That's Merlin's Tower, and it's sort of the central location. Offices, the dining hall, the training halls, a top floor that none of us are allowed to visit. The dorms are in the other towers.
Vivienne is waiting for me at the door to Merlin's Tower. She still looks furious, and Raphael is already inside. Are you coming?